Good morning, everyone. Welcome. FBC Radio Live. It's Friday, March the 31st, last day of March, John. And opening day was yesterday. The Bucks played the Celtics, and the Boston Bruins clinched the President's Trophy. It was a good night if you were a Boston fan, for sure. Except, you know, maybe not a Red Sox fan, although they did give you a little bit something to cheer for. You know, coming back and nearly tying it, but early on it looked pretty bad for the Red Sox. But we're going to start in the NBA, obviously, with the Celtics really just dominating the Milwaukee Bucks last night, blowing them out 140-99. Now, John, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and had the Celtics not faltered a few days ago and lost that game, this would have been a game where the Celtics would have could have brought themselves within to within one and had the tiebreaker. At the very least, they do have the tiebreaker right now, and they did win last night. So I guess I'll ask you, how big of a victory was this for the Celtics, and is this something that could eventually lead them to the one seed?
Well, it would have been bigger again if they had not shown up in Washington on Tuesday night, or not lost to Houston a couple of weeks ago, arguably the worst team in basketball. They've had some perplexing losses this year, losing three times to Orlando, twice to Chicago, who probably will qualify as a play-in team. But yeah, they had the opportunity to make this closer. Again, we don't know what would have happened last night if the Celtics had won Tuesday, because maybe Milwaukee treats the game differently. Now, Milwaukee had all their players, but it was pretty apparent from the get-go that the Celtics were right on point and Milwaukee wasn't. Thus, you get a 41-point win by the Celtics. The Celtics have five games left, as does Milwaukee. The Celtics would have to pretty much go 5-0 down the stretch. And Milwaukee, if they lose two games of their final five, they end up with the same record as the Celtics, and the Celtics do well in the tiebreaker. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Milwaukee will, you know, go 4-1 down the stretch, and I don't know if the Celtics can go 5-0. They've still got one game at Philadelphia. They're 3-0 against the 76ers this year. I think the one takeaway you can have, though, Ian, is the two teams that they're most likely going to have to beat to get to the finals will be Philadelphia and Milwaukee. And the Celtics are 5-1 against those two teams this year. And the only loss came when the Celtics had four of their starters out back on Valentine's Day, when they both managed the team and then played them the following night against Detroit for some reason. So against Philly and Milwaukee, the Celtics, I think, are very confident going into the postseason.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's a pretty good situation to be in. I mean, if you're struggling, at least they're not, you know, at times, you know, like you said, losing to Orlando twice. I mean, that's one of the more puzzling things about this season. But yeah, I mean, you're feeling pretty good about your two closest competitors now. Again, I mean, this is a Celtics team that, They're so good, I mean, that you're magnifying issues that, well, really aren't issues in the long term. And, you know, you look at, well, you know, you talk about Philadelphia, you talk about Milwaukee. They've been able to do quite well against them, not only this season, but in the past in the playoffs. These aren't teams that they've, you know, had to get the monkey off their back, so to speak, try to get over. Oh, we can't get past the Bucks. Oh, we can't get past the 76ers. Conversely, it's the opposite. It's the 76ers saying, oh, we can't get past the second round. I mean, forget about the Celtics. They can't get past the second round. So, you know, I think the Celtics are in good shape there. Everyone likes to bring up Miami, but I believe, John, and I saw this pop up yesterday, Miami is, I think they've scored the most points under 90 all season. So this isn't a deadly offensive team. They have opportunities, or they have stretches where they shoot well. But I mean, the reality of it is, Miami, I think, is, I don't know what it is. Is it history? Is it, you know, people love Jimmy Butler? I don't understand why Miami's always the, oh, you better watch out for them. Is it Pat Riley, John? I don't know. I think it's an honest question. I think they're a good team. I don't understand why they're constantly picked as the team that could, like, you know, cause trouble, and I don't know.
Well, I think part of it is, yeah, Pat Riley has a certain aura about him. I think Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA, and oftentimes when you get into a seven-game series, coaching does matter. Maybe in the regular season, not so much. Butler is just a guy who's going to bring it pretty much every night. He's a pain in the butt. Kyle Lowry has championship DNA. Tyler Hero can get really hot and put up 35. Bam Adebayo probably going to make third team All NBA as a center. So I mean, they present some problems because they play defense. Like you said, they've had more games under 90 than any team in the league. But kind of the style they play is physical. Maybe they don't play with the same pace as the Celtics or teams like that. So I think the Celtics would beat Miami. They beat them last year, but it sure was a struggle. I mean, even when you got to Game 7 and you had a 13-point lead with, what, 3.5 minutes left, Jimmy Butler's coming down the court, chucks up a three that would have probably won the game for Miami, right? Would have put them up one. So they're just a pain-in-the-butt type of team. You can beat them. I think you're more talented than them. In fact, I know you're more talented than them. But they're going to make you earn every single basket and every win in the series. So that's really where you go with that. And again, they've been a couple times the last few years in the postseason, and they beat you in the bubble to go to the finals, and you beat them last year to go to the finals. You didn't have much success, either team did, once they got to the finals. But yeah, that's a team that feels like a six-game series, where maybe if you play Brooklyn in the first round, it's a sweep or a five-game series, and it's not going to have the same after effect of when you take on the Miami Heat, who are just so well coached and are going to bring it every night and be physical with you.
Well, I think, you know, I agree that I think it would be a six-game series, but I think it would be more about the Celtics than it would be about the Heat. And by that, I mean, you know, the Celtics have a tendency to play really down to their competition. And I'm not saying they're going to play down to the Heat, but I feel like there's going to be, you know, we talk about the Bruins, obviously, crosstown, you know, not rivals, but same town, you know, winter sports friendly. You know, we talk about the Bruins and how they've maintained this high level of consistency, and that, you know, possibly they could go in through this playoffs, you know, season and really just run ragged, like, you know, 16-4, that type of thing. I think the Celtics obviously have the potential to go and win the NBA title, but I think it's going to be far more of a process. I mean, you're going to win a series 4-2. I think you're going to go 7 against Milwaukee, you know, but I also think that's going to be kind of a product of, well, you're going to have some nights where the Celtics are going to come out and they're just going to stink because they've done that. And again, it's not in their DNA. They don't do that regularly, but it happens enough that I think, you know, again, when you say Miami, sure, 6 games, but I think it's going to be more about the Celtics and maybe a game here and there where they just don't play to their expectations and end up losing to keep that series tight. So, maybe I'm just a little overconfident in what they can do. And I don't know. I feel like losing in the finals last year taught this team quite a bit. And I think they're going to be better and obviously have a more, I mean, I guess they're going to have more, a better opportunity, I think, to go all the way this year, because I think they've learned quite a bit over the year, especially last year. But I still get the feeling that you're going to get that clunker where they're just ice cold from three, you know, basically what, you know, we've seen out of this Celtics team every so often for the last few years.
And that's always been an issue in the NBA. I mean, you can go back all the way to like the 1987 NBA Finals. And again, people wax poetically about that time. Those are two great teams, the Celtics and Lakers. There were blowouts in that series as well. It just kind of happens that way, you know.
Yeah.
You get down, you're down 21, and you pull the starters because it's a series, you know. It's not the Tour de France. You start the next game at 0-0. So that does happen in the NBA. My issue with the Celtics is they carry themselves as if they've won multiple championships.
Uh-huh.
Now, the franchise has won 17, but this group hasn't won anything. You know, we keep hearing about Jason Tatum dunk on LeBron in Game 7 of the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals. Well, the Cavaliers won that game in that series. The Heat did beat them in the bubble. The Warriors did beat them last year. They still got to break through. They do kind of carry themselves as if they're a team that's accomplished a lot. Milwaukee at least does have a championship, so they can kind of lean on that. That's where I want to see the Celtics take it to the next level. I think they're good enough to win the championship.
Oh,
without
sure.
Without question. I mean, if they bring their A game and Tatum and Brown combine for 70 points like they did last night and be pretty efficient with it, who's beating them? I don't think anyone.
And
that's the key, is bringing it more often.
And that's exactly my point. The, you know, if the Celtics bring their A game, And for the most part, they do. I mean, you know, let's not make this sound like, you know, we're you know, talking about this team as like, they're 100% capable of going out and winning a title. And like you said, if they're at the top of their game, I don't think there's a team in the NBA that's going to beat them in 7 games. But like I said, unlike the Bruins, And this is the great luxury of having two teams that are really good running at the same time in the same town. Unlike the Bruins, they've had a few more bumps in the road, so to speak. And remarkably, the Bruins seem to just have, they have not. They've been very much like that 2018 Red Sox team. But, it'll be exciting to see if this is something they can build off of in terms of getting into the playoffs. I mean, just a few games left, so it's not unreasonable to think that this could be kind of like the spark to get them going. Wow, they just blew out maybe their biggest competition in the East by 41, and they're healthy. So it'll be interesting to see. Not surprisingly, John, I'm going to shift real quick to baseball. I mentioned the Red Sox and, you know, how they almost came back, but they were getting blown out early. Shohei Ohtani had a phenomenal, phenomenal debut. 10 strikeouts, no earned runs. Angels lost. The Angels lost. And I'm not surprised. I mean, we literally talked about this yesterday. And before you know, what's going to happen with Shohei Ohtani and what's going to happen in free agency or at the trade deadline, and, you know, how the Angels have just had this remarkable run of having the most incredible talent but doing absolutely nothing with it. They're among the top five teams across all major sports right now with the longest playoff postseason drought. Okay, I think they're at 8 years, 2014. So essentially almost the entire career of Mike Trout. It's incredible how this team manages to fail with amazing players like Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. And yesterday was just another example of it, and something where I think, based on our conversation yesterday, the trade talk is going to heat up rather quickly, because I just don't know if this Angels team, and I'm not reacting to just this one game, it's more or less just expectations for this Angels team, you shouldn't have any, because I don't think they're going to be that good, and I think, unfortunately for them, that's going to mean losing Ohtani before free agency, and at the very least, hopefully they get something of some value in return.
You know who has the longest drought of the four major sports leagues in terms of
the Jets, drought? Right?
Yeah,
12 years.
Yes. That will change this year when Aaron Charles Rodgers takes over as quarterback. He'll get them in the playoffs. But yeah, the longest drought, the Jets, now that Sacramento finally clinched the playoff spot. They hadn't been to the playoffs since 2006. It's amazing. And the Angels, sure, you've had the best player in baseball, either whether it's Ohtani or Trout or both, you know, for a long period of time, and you've done nothing with that. But I said this till I'm blue in the face, that baseball is just this weird sport where you can have the two best players and it doesn't really mean that you're going to be a World Series contender, because, you know, Mike Trout's only going to get up so many times.
I just want him to be a playoff contender. Forget a World Series contender. Just be a playoff contender.
Six teams make the playoffs out of 15, right? So, you know, win 86 games, you probably sneak in. Or at least get to September and you're a game or two out of the wild card. They don't even get to that. You know who's going to like this reference? This is a really old reference. Clark Judge will like this reference. They almost feel like the 60s Chicago Bears, who had Dick Butkus, who was the best defensive player in football, had Gale Sayers, who was the most electric running back, and they never made the postseason. Like, you had two of the five best players in the world playing, and you never made the postseason. Sorry for the old man reference. But, you know, I think Clark would really appreciate that. Yeah, it's perplexing. What did he do? You would think that he'd be maybe spent after the WBC and maybe not have a lot of juice left.
No, he just picks up right where he left off.
The guy is just a freak. I mean, you know, I'm sure tonight he'll hit a home run and be on his way to yet another great season. I mean, we're watching literally a unicorn among unicorns. Just incredible. But yeah, they literally dropped the ball and weren't able to win against Oakland, who is a Triple-A team. Oakland's clearly the worst team in baseball. And again, it's one of 162, I get it, but it's just kind of, you know, here they are again, you know.
Yeah, it's just players and Angels gonna Angel. You know, that's what I'm saying. That's what's so, like, deflating if you're, like, an Angels fan, because you're seeing this and you're like, this is exactly what they're going through. They watch greatness lose all the time, and it's unfortunate for them.
what do you do if you go to an Angels game, right? So Ohtani's pitching, so you obviously watch him pitch against the other team, and then you wait for Ohtani and Trout to get up, and the rest of the game you don't have to watch, right? Yeah. Because it's just there's nothing going on there.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd take a bunch of Tums because, you know, I knew my stomach was going to be upset because it's going to be a whole roller coaster of emotion knowing that, oh, yeah, you're going to see something great. But unfortunately, it's going to end in a loss. So last night, the Bruins, Boston Bruins, secured their 58th win of the season, which is obviously now a new franchise record in a overtime victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets. David Pastrnak scored his 53rd goal this season. It's the highest amount since 1989-1990. Long time for Bruins fans. Look, we talked about them quite a bit yesterday. Just greatness. I mean, they're on pace right now for 63 wins. That would be a record. They're on pace to tie the points record at 132. And, you know, at this point, it's appreciate this magical regular season run because, well, again, it takes on a whole different view this season if they don't win the Stanley Cup. I'm confident that they will. They've given no reason for them not to be the overwhelming favorite, not just the favorite, John, the overwhelming favorite to win this tournament coming up. Last night was nice. It was good to see them win on home ice, and I was happy. I was very happy that it ended in overtime and not a shootout.
Yes, you're anti-shootout, which you won't have to worry about in the postseason, right? So, yeah, got it done with Pastrnak scoring the game-winning goal, and, you know, here they are. And again, what do they do the final seven games of the season? Is it important to get the wins record? Is it important to get the points record? I think, obviously, the most important thing is winning the Stanley Cup. So you rest some of these players, like they did last weekend, when you get three of the top players the second of the back-to-back games off in Carolina, of all places, and you still beat them. That, to me, was one of the most impressive wins of the season, right? You didn't have, Marchand,
Bergeron,
Lindholm. So three of your top five or six players aren't there, and you still beat a team that you struggled with, especially in Carolina. So, yeah, that was impressive. So that's, you know, kind of the fine-tuning you can do. In hockey, they kind of start the playoffs up pretty quickly. In basketball, the Celtics are going to get pretty much a week off after the season because you have the play-in tournament. So maybe the teams handle that type of stuff differently going down the stretch because I believe the Bruins play five games in 8 nights or 8 days in the season. So you got to kind of manage that a little bit.
Well, I mean, there's good and bad to it. One, I personally think they should go for the wins record because, I mean, history is great. And, you know, if they go on to win the cup and maybe they fall short of the wins, it's like, well, you know, that would have been nice to do that. You know, go break the President's Trophy curse, set a wins record, possibly set a points record, depending on, you know, what they do. But, I mean, I'm sure they're going to rest a couple guys here and there, and I don't think it's going to be overwhelmingly a mission to rest these players. I mean, yeah, they've locked up the President's Trophy. They really don't have anything else to play for other than those victories, but hockey's a pretty incredible thing in the sense that the Bruins have been basically playing playoff hockey for the last month and a half. And by that, I mean a lot of games in few days. They've been pretty much playing every other night for what seems like I said, about a month and a half. So I think that's a positive. Because I think that's something where you just kind of, you get into that mode. And I think they've been in that mode. They've been successful in that mode now for a month and a half. So I think getting into the playoffs, the biggest concern I have for them is if they beat a team in four straight games and have to wait a week to play. And that concern just is, well, maybe they come out a little bit slow in game one of the next series and maybe that's enough for them to lose that game, or maybe it gives you a little bit of pause for concern or cause for concern. Either way, I look at this team as I want them to keep doing what they're doing. I want them to go for the wins record. You know, maybe choose the game against St. Louis to rest a couple of your key guys because I don't necessarily feel great about them going up against the Craig Berube coached Blues team that has nothing to play for. So, I want them to go for history. I want them to go for the wins. save me with the 2000. We're already in 2007 Patriots territory, okay? So, like, a loss in the Stanley Cup final, or not getting there or whatever, that's going to be devastating. So, you know what? Go for the wins record. You know, make history, because, well, those type of teams are remembered a lot longer than even the 2011 Bruins, who are just another team that won a Stanley Cup now over a decade ago.
Yeah, they'd have to win five of their final seven, which is a pace they've certainly been on even more so this year, right? So that's
pretty much all season. That's the pace they've been on.
Yeah.
So.
And they need 12 of a possible 14 points to eclipse the Canadiens, which it would be interesting because I believe the final game of the season is
against
Montreal.
The Canadiens.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting. And you know, the Canadiens, who put up a pretty good fight last week when they came in here, would certainly put up a resistance to the Bruins if the Bruins are going to try to break the Canadiens' record. So that would be a fun game to watch. But, yeah, I mean, the thing about hockey is that I don't think the players really deal with load management all that well.
Like, no,
they don't want to sit, right? So, and wasn't it Marchand before the 2019 Stanley Cup Finals got hurt in scrimmage, an inter-squad scrimmage, when, you know, something happened with his hand? So, you know, it can happen at any point. But these guys don't like to sit. They just don't. They're just not wired that way. Basketball players, a lot of times with basketball, and they get criticized a bit too much about this, it's more about the teams that want to load management, the players. So oftentimes the players want to play, and I know Jason Tatum doesn't like to sit, and the team's like, well, you're going to sit because, you know, this is going to be better for us.
And here's the thing in hockey, too. You can, in a way, load manage just by how you manage the lines throughout the game.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean having a player sit, but it could just mean that, you know, the third and fourth line gets a little bit more, you know, a few more minutes every game as opposed to what it normally would be. So, you know, in that way, and plus, like I said, I mean, hockey is this is the type of pace they're going to have to go at if they want to win a Stanley Cup. So I don't think shying away from it is the right move for a team like the Bruins who, you know, again, this entire season, they have proven that they are just an incredible example of consistency. And I don't see why, or I don't, you know, what's the reason for messing with that. So I think you should continue to pursue those records and continue to play like you have been playing for the last 75 games. And, you know, keep that going in October. Keep that going next month and into the postseason, and maybe, you know, pick up 16 more wins, and I think we'd be pretty happy with that. Or I would,
well,
at least.
You know, I know you would. I would, too. Why not? Love to see the Bruins win another cup. My poll is up there at JohnSapp25. Who's going to end up with more wins this year? The Bruins, and that includes the playoffs, or the Red Sox. And it might be close,
yeah.
Right? Because if the Bruins are, what, at 58 right now? Say they get to 63. And then win another 16 in the postseason. That gets them to 79. The number right now, the over and under for the Red Sox is like 77.5.
It's pretty close. Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah. I mean, that might be some action I'd be willing to take. But we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. And maybe a few more of these games against the Orioles. And we're thinking maybe that might be more of a possibility. But for now, though, that's going to do it. Give us a follow on Twitter at FPC Radio Live. We will be back. We got some time off next week, so we will be back shortly after. Surprise, surprise, John. I'm kind of just throwing that at you now. I know you didn't know about that, but we will. But we will be back shortly thereafter. But there'll be plenty of content over at Full Press Coverage and fullpresshockey.com. So check that out, and we will talk to you then. Have a great weekend, and let's go Bruins.